This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's October the 19th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, Underwriters Laboratories has issued standards for E85 pumps. A government report shows USDA is not doing enough to track its beginning farmer efforts. And AFBF, the American Farm Bureau Federation, does not like the average crop revenue portion, or ACR, of the Senate's new farm bill proposal. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then we'll take a little bit of time to talk about anhydrous ammonia applications. Remember these two numbers, 4 and 50. It all comes up in this Friday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby December wheat at 855.5, we're up 30 for the day. The March contract at 874.5, up 30 as well. And the May futures there at $8.31, a settlement price 26.25 higher. December corn, that's where the threes start, 370.25, up 3 cents. March futures at 386, up 2.5, and the May futures at $3.97. up 3.25. December contract $4.15, two higher. November soybeans down 8.25 at $9.83. January futures $10.25, down 9 cents. The March at 10.15¾, down 7.5. And November beans 9.71½, down 11¼. December bean meal futures 276.30, down $1.80. January futures at 279.40, down $1 even. December bean oil 43 lower. 40.56 is settlement price. January futures at 41.04, down 44. October live cattle 95.30, a dime lower for the day. December futures down 40 at 97.30. Feeder cattle over at the Merck 111.50, down 75 cents. November futures 92.5 lower at 111.30. December lean hog futures $56.92, down 45. February's at $63.32, down 27.5. And the April lean hogs managed to gain 2.5 cents today. They were up 2.5 at $67.95. Outside markets, crude oil January contract, or rather November contract, $88.50, down 97 cents for the day. December futures at $86.92, down $1.12. The U.S. dollar is off 0.164 at 77.42 at this hour. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average stands at 13,624, and it is currently down 264 points for the day.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at the Chicago Board of Trade and the outside markets, the Mercantile Exchange, is Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Maybe we better start with the Dow that's down 272 points at this hour.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one to overcome next week, and it may bleed into our grain markets. I think the majority of the trouble started with the financial markets. You know, the banks have had some real tough times since the subprime credit issues have hit the markets. That has not improved that much in the liquidity. Although it's improved a little bit, Todd, it hasn't really gotten to levels that everybody feels good about. Bank of America came out with some pretty tough numbers. And, you know, we got to realize that the financial institutions, the banks, they make up about over 20% of the S&P 500, so they're a big key, heavy indicator on how the S&P is going to go, and that kind of blends into the Dow and the NASDAQ as well. So we got that set up early in the week. We also had the Fed came in with their beige book. They noted a lot about the weak housing market, a lot more than the trade probably wanted, and it kind of changed the tone in Wall Street, we felt like. And then today, probably the icing on the cake was Caterpillar. Their earnings were lowered. You know, a long time ago, you and I talked about globalization and Caterpillar. That's still as prevalent as ever. Their earnings were lowered below the consensus. They noted high operating costs. They noted the sales outside North America not going up and offsetting the North American declines enough to change their earnings and make them better. And I think probably most importantly, they came out with a forecasted GDP for the United States of 1.5% next year in 2008. This is a recessionary number in some circles because it's below 2%. So those things kind of hit the market today, and you could see where the crude oil and earlier in the day the gold ended up being more of a liability because it's getting back to the idea if we can't keep the stock market going up on good growth, then Caterpillar can't have good growth outside the United States to offset what's happening inside the United States. Are we going to have that kind of demand out there in the future?
And this all comes, I think this is right, if Paul Cooley got the date right, and I'm sure it is, on the 20 years to the day of the big crash in 1987.
That's right, October 19th, 1987. And the Wall Street Journal and, you know, CNBC and some of the other major financial powerhouses in the media have been doing specials on that. So maybe that filtered in as well in terms of, you know, just psychology and self-fulfilling prophecy. Who knows?
Well, self-fulfilling for maybe the day, and maybe we can turn things around a bit next week.
Well, I'm a little bit skeptical about that. You know, we're probably going to be down about 2% today on the day in the Dow. And historically, when you go down 2% or more, it takes several days, if not weeks, to rebuild the market and get the confidence back. I think the other thing that bothers me the most about today's price action, it makes sense, but it bothers me, is that the bonds are up sharply, and they're in a mindset of a flight to quality at this point, and the VIX has also reacted with the sharply higher bonds. The VIX, the volatility index on stocks, is back up a little over 20% after being down at about a 7 or 8 week low. So those two indicators would say we've still got some issues to contend with when we come back Monday.
I'd like to stay with the outside markets just a bit and talk some more about crude oil and the dollar. Crude, of course, making highs, the dollar making lows. And we'll talk about this more in Commodity Week just a bit, too, and get some idea from the rest of the panelists that will join us this afternoon. You can hear that program tomorrow. Arlen Suderman is our guest, and we'll air that at 11:30 tomorrow. But I want them and you, Mike, to take up this a thought that I got from Bill Fordham, who's with CNS Grain Marketing out of Illinois, and was suggesting that the Saudis, of course, have tied the crude oil to the dollar, but if that were to be unbuckled, things might really cut loose to the downside for the U.S. economy.
Well, there's no question about that. And, you know, you throw in there Japan and China, and the Europeans are probably even more important than the Saudis from a standpoint of monkeying around with the exchange rates and giving a peg. You know, the dollar has been and always will be the reserve currency since we went off the gold standard in terms of how the financial markets think, Todd. And so if you start monkeying around with that and thinking otherwise, and you talk about a basket of currencies or you talk about the euro, then you've got to go back and say, holy cow, over 60% of world commodity prices are priced in U.S. dollars. How will that impact everybody? And that's some pretty big economics, and it would send some shockwaves through the market. I think probably more in the near term that has to be addressed, because that's such a big piece of information to have to chew and digest, is today's price action with the lower dollar. I think all central banks at this point, the U.S., the ECB, the Japanese, the Chinese, no one wants a weaker dollar. It doesn't mean they're going to come in and intervene, although we think they probably will because history says they will. But no one wants a weaker dollar at this point, and I think we finally hit that level where a weaker dollar from here doesn't necessarily mean good times and good demand and higher exports for the United States, because a weaker dollar from here says we probably got some financial problems in terms of the credit crunch and the housing market. And again, it goes back to the U.S. usually leads the world in terms of the global economy. And so I think at this point we can say after today that if the dollar goes any lower here and central banks don't intervene, it's going to be more negative for both commodities and the financial and equity markets.
I was going to ask you to put it in perspective for commodities, but you just did on the futures market. Maybe we should just transition right into what the daily trade was like in Chicago. Wheat futures caught some people, I suppose, on the wrong side of the market as they pushed dramatically higher today.
Yeah, we had several things working in the favor of a bounce, and it seemed like they came together. Russia came out with a higher export tariff is supposed to be coming down the road. Hadn't seen confirmation of that, so I'll be watching that for Monday. But we also saw a little bit more dryness in the southern plains of the United States, more dryness in Australia. Those things kind of all balled up together, and quite frankly, the shorts this week had a real difficult time pushing this wheat lower once we went below that neckline of 835, and it went down to around the 820 level, but really bounced pretty nicely, and you could see there's a lot of congestion there. And so when I talked to the floor after the close, the pool on wheat at limit for D's futures was around 1,000 contracts. They checked the volume for us, and it was very interesting because heavy volume right around 835 to 840, but then it tapered off dramatically as we went higher. So there was probably a lot of short covering as a result of these other factors that laid themselves out earlier today, and then we were able to bust back through 845. That probably got the ball rolling, but on a lighter volume. So the key now is to have follow-through next week since the volume was lighter, and we also bring back into from out of the radar screen and back in closer picture the right shoulder of the December futures right around 890. If you can go back above 890, then you negate that head and shoulders top formation that a lot of people, including us, have been looking at.
Wheat is supply-side-driven sort of move to the upside, short the crop on the world market, not looking for anything really to come into the marketplace from the southern hemisphere. They've not had a good year in Australia, and the wheat crop continues to decline there. Won't get anything really new until July of next year. It's kind of the opposite in the beans, where a new crop is being put into the ground, and they've gotten some rainfall, I think, in some of the drier areas of Brazil.
Yeah, they have, and today was a big interesting day because we did firm up when the noontime maps came out. Initially, we had thought that we were going to have a wetter Brazilian forecast, especially for Mato Grosso. Some of the private guys came in at noontime Chicago time, dried that out a little bit, and we were watching to see, okay, are the beans going to stay with the crude oil and the bean oil and the weakness there, or are they going to try and trim some of their losses because of this new weather outlook? And so you can see that by today's close and by trimming the losses and coming back towards the middle of the range, we would say you've got the beans still trading more weather than outside markets. And having said that, the bean oil probably is the weakest complex out there if the crude oil continues lower with the outside markets. So the beans in their negative territory, whereas the wheat and the corn both showed green, you know, colors today and up markets today, that might continue to be seen where the beans are not going as hard up as the corn or wheat just because of the drag of the bean oil if the crude oil stays weaker. But you're right, the Brazilian weather is getting critical, and I think you combine that with the idea by a lot of traders in Chicago that you're going to have a smaller yield in the November report for the United States here, puts more pressure on Brazil performing and having a big crop.
Wait, follow up and qualify this for me. Bean oil will be the weakest part of the complex because it's, and it's made recent highs.
Yes,
but
because it's been following the crude oil more than anything.
And so
since the crude oil keeps falling with the Dow and the equities markets because of this lower global demand mindset, then bean oil will probably be the one that gets hit the hardest off that, of the grain complex.
And then let's talk and close our conversation out with corn, which for the week was the strongest of the commodities. Wheat was up anywhere between 2 and 12 cents for the week. Beans were up 6 to 10 for the week. But corn gained 19 and a quarter in the nearby December contract and 15 in the deferred contract week over week on a Friday close.
Yeah, Chicago's really taking note of the basis, and it's really interesting. If you look at a DTN National Corn Index chart, back on the 9th of October, we were running at about 299 nationally for cash corn. Now, after today, we're at 331, and so you're talking about a major percentage jump in the national corn index price in light of a 13.3 billion bushel crop and lower ethanol demand. And Chicago probably started to look away from those two negative factors and said, hey, wait a minute, our export sales year-to-date for the marketing year are running 43% of the total versus the five-year average of about 28%. So I think probably we've made a transition in Chicago's mindset in the microeconomic side of things that the demand is helping support this market and that the supplies being big are not huge and burdensome supplies. They're actually supplies that we're going to need and use up relatively quickly. And I think if you didn't have the stronger basis, and you didn't have the increase in ethanol demand that was reported by Department of Energy earlier this week, they probably may not have given that big of a rally to the corn and taken some profit, but they hung in there this week, and it was nice to see.
Mike, we appreciate you being with us.
Bob, thanks so much, and have a great weekend.
Hey, you too. Mike Zuzulo is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Friday afternoons.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
At the bottom of the hour, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Time now for your Ag Newscast. Here's your Director of Ag Programming, Dave Dickey.
In agricultural news, Underwriters Laboratories has issued its long-awaited safety standards for E85 pumps and other equipment. Publication of the standards allows manufacturers to produce equipment that complies with these safety requirements and retailers to install the equipment, secure in the knowledge that they will be able to purchase liability insurance. Some analysts predict the UL action could lead to a doubling of E85 pumps over the next 12 months, the 2,600 outlets. A Government Accountability Office report says USDA does not measure outcomes of performance of beginning farmers that the department provides financial assistance. The GAO report says USDA runs a risk that its beginning farmer efforts are not mutually reinforcing or coordinated. The GAO report concluded USDA should adopt a broader department-wide strategic goal for helping young and beginning farmers, including measurements that provide a better overall understanding of federal assistance. The American Farm Bureau Federation is criticizing the pending Senate version of the Farm Bill. AFBF President Bob Stallman says he has concerns over Senate Ag Committee Chairman Tom Harkin's average crop revenue program. Stallman says it would result in cuts to traditional subsidy programs, provide the World Trade Organization challenges, and shift money from the commodity title to nutrition and conservation. AFBF spokesperson Bob Young.
This is pretty clearly a raid on the commodity program spending to be able to go off and do some other things that they want to do on the conservation side of the house, and that frankly causes us some concern. If you talk to most, say cotton or rice folks or whatever, and even in some of the examples that folks have laid out there already, the direct payment support would be much better for under current programs for the rice folks, certainly, and cotton folks a pretty close second.
National Farmers Union President Tom Bias also has numerous questions about Harkin's proposal. Bias adds he does not believe many producers will opt for the average crop revenue program because it takes more than $3 billion out of traditional subsidy programs. And USDA Chief Economist Keith Collins testified yesterday before the House Agriculture Committee. Collins estimates that the 2007-2008 corn plantings will drop by 5.8 million acres to 87 million, while soybean plantings will increase by 5.5 million acres to 70 million. Collins put wheat plantings for 2007-2008 at 64 million. Collins says that 4.5 million acres of corn for 2007-2008 will be used to produce ethanol. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Reminding you to visit our website. The address is WILLAG.org. There you'll find Commodity Week along with the other ag programming. The show from tomorrow will be posted there this evening by about 5:30 or 6 o'clock. Pick it up at WILLAG.org. Well, up next, the price of nitrogen is high, and that means farmers should be very careful when they apply the anhydrous ammonia this fall.
The timing of anhydrous ammonia applications is pretty simple if you know two figures, 4 and 50. Fabian Fernandez, Extension Soil Fertility and Plant Nutrition Specialist, says farmers should not apply in this fall until the soil temperatures have dropped to 50 degrees at the 4-inch level.
Well, it's very, very important to be looking at the soil temperature. That's the best way to figure out when the soils will be ready for anhydrous application in the fall. And that temperature has to be 50 degrees Fahrenheit or below before we can apply anhydrous without being worried about a lot of nitrogen, possible nitrogen loss. So 50 degrees is the temperature.
50 degrees at the 4-inch level, says University of Illinois Extension's Fernandez. And there are several websites that report soil temperatures, but that it's best for a farmer to use his own thermometer.
And the 50-degree temperature is a very reasonable temperature because in most years that allows producers to go in the field when the soil conditions are the best for the anhydrous application. You don't want to go into the fields when it's extremely wet or when the soils are starting to freeze.
As for the application rate, the U of I's Fernandez says the easiest way for a farmer to make the calculations is to visit the in-rate calculator on the Iowa State website. It is populated with data from Illinois and other Midwestern states and bases the rate of application on location, crop rotation, the price of nitrogen, and the expected cash price of corn. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is AM 580. We're joined on this Friday afternoon by Bruce Bostert. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, to take a look at the cash grain market. Hi, Bruce.
Hi there.
Tell me about cash grain in your area to begin with and the basis levels throughout the week.
Okay. In our area, we are busy wrapping up harvest here. Basically, we're 90-plus percent done on everything. We saw a few days of some pretty good cash movement on the rally here. Now, I think part of that is just because of our location. We had some bushels that were coming due where people had to make their decision on store or sell, and we had some good board pops in here, and we saw some cash movement. Now, if you were further south or west where they were a little further along in harvest and was already in storage, or out in the western belt where they were rained out, it sounds like movement was pretty quiet. And we can see that reflected in the basis levels. Barge freight has really backed off. A mid-miss barge has gone from 600% of tariff last week to 475 this week. Sounds like the cost of cars on the Union Pacific or the BN has lightened up in the last week or so. And I think these rains out west are kind of serving to drag out the rest of harvest, and that's helping basis out.
And helping basis out to the tune of how many pennies, do you think?
Oh, you know, on the CN rail where I'm at, we've seen 2 or 3 cents increase, and it feels like it could firm up a little bit more on both corn and soybeans. Beans were getting put away. The processor has been improving, kind of steadily trying to grab what beans they can here over the last week or two. Gulf numbers, I think we've continued to see good exports there, so it's kind of choppy, but it looks like they still need to grab some bushels.
And finally, it seems to me that while we have a very large crop and we're slowing down the process now, more than halfway through, that the infrastructure has done a really pretty good job of bringing in that crop and putting it away to this point. Have I misconstrued that or not?
Right here, it seems to me that we've had been very fortunate in how we put it away. In August, if you would have told me that things would have gone as smoothly at Ludlow Co-op as they went this fall, I would have been tickled to death, but I probably wouldn't have believed it. It seems like we've missed any train wrecks this fall.
Well, it's a testament to your management style.
Yeah, I will say that. That sounds a lot better than just pure dumb luck.
What are your bids for the day?
Into Paxton today, we're at 344 on corn and 949 on soybean.
All right, thanks so much. We appreciate it, Bruce.
Thank you.
Hey, Bruce Bostert is the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Joins us here at the Closing Market Report each and every Friday afternoon. In 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Right now, it's time for your regional
Newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. The Illinois National Guard will send 2,700 members from its Urbana-based 33rd Infantry Brigade to Afghanistan to help train the Army and National Police. The members, who are drawn from across Illinois, will leave for training as early as next summer. Colonel Alicia Tate Nadeau of the Illinois National Guard says the unit will be one of eight from across the country that's being readied for deployment in Iraq or Afghanistan. A Champaign-Urbana Public Health District investigator says Unit 4 schools are doing everything to ensure safety after a case of staph infection was confirmed at Edison Middle School. A female student from the school was briefly hospitalized and released yesterday. She's now back in class. Edison students are taking a note home to parents outlining precautions to take to prevent such infections from spreading. Meanwhile, the custodians cleaned and disinfected all surfaces at the school yesterday. The Douglas County Board voted 6-0 with one member absent this morning to place a half-cent sales tax referendum on the February 5th ballot. Voters will be asked to approve the tax to pay for upgrades to public safety, including expanding the county jail and hiring additional sheriff's personnel. A tornado damaged up to 250 buildings as it swept across northern Indiana, including the city of Napanee. Among the buildings damaged were three recreational vehicle manufacturing plants. Indiana House Speaker Patrick Bauer is endorsing Democrat Hillary Clinton for president. Bauer says he believes Indiana Senator Revan Bayh could become the vice presidential nominee. Bayh's spokesman says the decision on a vice presidential candidacy is beyond Bayh's control. And Roger Ebert will become just the second film critic to be honored at the Gotham Awards in New York City for a career of championing independent cinema. The 65-year-old Urbana native will receive the honor at the November 27th event at Brooklyn's Steiner Studios. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. This is WILL Urbana. It is a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. We're joined this afternoon to take a look at what's more October-like forecast by Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the forecast for the weekend. A little more rainfall, a little wet, or are we going to dry her out?
I think we're going to dry out this a little bit. We'll see skies start to clear later on tonight, and it should be fairly nice through most of the weekend. In fact, we should get some warm weather probably in here by Sunday as winds turn very strong southerly again, and we have a low pressure system moving up to our west through Iowa. So we'll see temperatures soar back into the 70s, maybe even 80 again. But then next week, we'll be closing that out as upper low starts drifting in over the Midwest and probably will hang around most of the week. And it looks like next week's going to be damp, very cloudy, and probably cool to normal to below normal temperatures. So I think this could be our last real gasp of very warm weather here for maybe the season.
Sounds like fall and then potentially winter will come our way. And I suppose the seasons turn one way or the other, don't they? How did we finish up the fall season or finish up the last month climatologically?
Well, temperatures for October so far have been running about 5 to 7 degrees above normal here in Illinois with sort of a west to east gradient. We had some very warm weather. We did have a period there where we were, for a few days, where we were actually well below normal, but wasn't enough to totally compensate the very warm weather we've had so far this month. So we've ended up very warm. Rainfall, thanks to this week, is actually pretty close to normal across most of Illinois right now for the month of October. We're still working on deficits, especially across southern and central Illinois, that have sort of built up over the last several months, but now that the growing season, the major growing crops have stopped growing, we'll see a lot of the water getting into the soil and into the running off into the streams and rivers and staying there as opposed to being transpired by the plants. And, once we get our first freeze here sometime, we'll end the growing season completely. But right now, it looks like with this wet period coming up, we'll see some slow recovery for the dry weather we've had.
Steve, thanks for joining us today.
All right, Todd, have a good weekend.
You too. Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center right here in Champaign County at the Illinois State Water Survey. Two things to remind you of. First, please visit our website at willag.org. There you'll find a link to most of the daily ag programming, including our weekend program called Commodity Week. It should be posted by 6 o'clock this evening. That's at will.
globalag.org. The second is on the cold and flu season. When I travel around the world, and we hear this often here, but it is a national and a world and a global sort of imperative during the cold and flu season and all year long to prevent anything, most anything, from being transferred from one person to the next, the most important thing is to wash your hands. So be aware of that. Keep yourself clean. Wash your hands. Keep the sniffles away. That's the way we'll go for this afternoon. It's a Friday. You have a good afternoon and a great weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.